Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. I'm talking with Loz Antonenko today. Loz, how are you? And where are you walking to?
Well, I'm unstoppable and I'm going everywhere and nowhere all at once on a treadmill.
I'm not going to stop you. Keep going. I'm not doing that. So Loz is, as you know, because you're listening to the podcast and not looking at it, Loz is on a walking machine and she's got a cat ears headphone. I think we will have to take a screenshot of this too because it looks awesome.
Go for it. So,
not yet.
Soon.
So Loz. So for people who have no idea, saying who's Loz Antonenko, who are you, Loz? Who are you? And why are you talking to me on the podcast? And what are we generally going to talk about?
Well, that's a very big question with a very convoluted answer. But in a nutshell, I am the world's best mojo mentor. And I can say that because I don't know another one.
That was going to be one of my questions. So I'm going to ask that right now because that was one of my questions that if it didn't crop up just organically in the podcast, what the hell is a mojo mentor? Well, it's obviously you.
It is me. So I'm an interdisciplinary, multifaceted, health-obsessed fitness guru. I live and breathe, walk the talk, and have studied a whole heap of evidence-based disciplines. I started calling myself a sustainable lifestyle consultant, but realized that my ADD and my over-explaining was getting in the way of that making sense. So I started calling myself a healthy habit coach. That also became cloudy because the coaching space has become a very red ocean with a lot of people who don't have evidence-based backgrounds, who do a course, read a book, and then start to proclaim to the world that they're a coach. So to differentiate myself from the masses of people that don't actually know what they're talking about or don't do what I do, I started referring to myself as a mojo mentor because when I was working with people, Saul, people were going, I need more mojo and you're helping me find that. And so as a mentor, it means that I'm also walking the talk. I've been there before people and success leaves clues. So mojo mentorship, motivation maven, there's lots of ways that I refer to myself. Mm. But I am actually a qualified interdisciplinary coach spanning about 13 disciplines.
Yeah, so there you go. So that's the interesting thing about terms, isn't it? Because terms do actually, words have meaning. And like when you say, when somebody... Unlike, for example, like us having to call ourselves like something, like call ourselves a creative agency, but it it's descriptive, but then it's more than that. So it's interesting you having, I think it's pretty cool being able to create your own definition outside of the other useful ones that are already there too, that people, you know, get, like they'll go, okay, I generally get what a lifestyle coaches, but then like the way you just explained it then actually answered probably a bunch of questions that I sort of, like, after learning a little bit about you, actually like a reasonable amount from your website, I sort of got the, it was cross, had a big emphasis on fitness and health and that part of it. But then for people going, okay, she's also saying lifestyle coach. For some people, that'll conjure up, you know, X amount of meanings of things that they're like, oh, it just means like someone, like you were kind of addressing, you were going, oh, there's people, you know, I guess like in every industry, people, you know, just throw themselves into it and they're not necessarily qualified or experienced. I mean, that's not unusual, right? That's pretty
normal. Yeah, and there's a difference between being qualified and having a piece of paper and doing an online course and being life qualified too, Saul. I think that what differentiates me from other people, which is why I started to referring myself differently with a unique title, is that I have life experience and everything that I teach people is something that I've actually had to learn and walk the path of myself to get myself unstuck. So it comes from a whole bunch of stuffing up and failing forward and reframing failure as feedback in business and in life, because both of those things are inherently intertwined, but also understanding that becoming a coach is not something you can just say you're going to do. I think in an industry that isn't scrutinized enough, where every coaching and mentorship are slightly different, and success leaves clues, as I said. So if I can use my participation in life and my failures as feedback and help to educate people on the way to do things well, because the science actually says so, and marry that with the lived experience that I've had and say, don't do this, this is the hard way, I'll give you the easiest hack so that you can actually the unstoppable life that you desire in your life, in your business, and all facets of whatever opportunities you want to bring to this existence in this life.
What do you think, as you're talking there, I find myself, I think it's just how my mind works. I'll often go off on different tangents when I sort of hook onto something that that somebody's said. Sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not good. But like you sort of talking about your experience and that mixed with this and this and this, what do you think about the that idea that is out there that you hear occasionally from people when they're either like looking to say engage a coach or business mentor or lifestyle coach or any sort of combination of those things, and there's this opinion which I'm sort of I get, but I want to hear what you think, where people go, oh, like, how do I know? I'm sort of along the lines when people frame it like, how do I know, you know, Loz or this person, like, is like, what makes them more of an expert than you know, so and so? It's this idea that people have to quantify what that expertise means, right? And I find that I find that sort of funny in one sense, because part of that, not in necessarily the religious sense, but is like faith that, like, if they hear you talk, right, and they go, and for some reason that resonates with them straight away, and then that's got nothing to do with, like, if they come to a presentation of yours for the first time and they hear you talk, that's actually going to have nothing to do necessarily with them knowing a bunch of actual facts about you. Like, that'll just be they feel inspired, and it's very amorphous, right? So
yeah,
where does, so in your mind, doing this for a while now, obviously, where does the necessary or the perceived requirements for having, you know, facts for, you know, to go, this person's an expert, therefore I feel that they're going to be helpful, versus just how they feel about you. Like, where's the balance between that in your mind?
I think that's a great question. And I think having subjective experience and objective hard metrics and a proven process, really the marriage of those two strategies, is what brings together effective coaching and a mentorship relationship between, you know, two parties. So my biggest challenge, and that was a fantastic question, right? Mm. My biggest challenge is that, you know, people will speak to somebody because they say they're a business coach.
Mm.
Okay. Now, I'll go and Google, because I have ADHD and I'm unmedicated, and I got diagnosed with ADHD in 1998 before it was cool, right? And I stopped taking medication in 2009 because it stunted my growth and stunted my creativity, and I've just embraced the crazy, and I have strategies in place, right? But if somebody tells me they're a business coach, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to Google them and find out what they've actually done personally in business. What is it that tells me that they're going to be an effective coach? Now, the things that I would look for personally is that they have done some form of formal study that enables them to put together cohesive strategies for clients to be able to take them from one position, which may not be ideal, to an ideal position. And they've got some framework that they can use because they've done the study and they understand how people work, how business works, and what those mechanics really are. But I'm also going to want to make sure that if I'm getting advice for somebody, that that person has had success in the area that I'm trying to attain success in.
Mm.
So, you know, I see plenty of people out there saying that they're business coaches, And the only thing they've ever done is run a business that only has them in it, or a multi-level marketing business, even worse. You know, they've sold Scamway, you know, and they're telling me that they're going to be a business coach. So to me, like, that doesn't fit for me. But also, you know, they might just not be my cup of tea. You know, maybe I want to drink coffee. And, you know, nothing that, you know, I talk about as a coach is new. Like, nothing is new. The way that I assemble the knowledge and the way that I deliver the experience to people and the methodology that sits behind that and the proven processes and the science-backed, evidence-based approaches that I take, you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea either. You know, I'm more like a fine wine drunk out of a dog bowl. And I'll be the first to admit that, right?
What sort of dog?
A Kelpie. A working dog is like, I help. What's next? And that's my life.
Ah, right? So it's a helpie, not a Kelpie.
Yeah, helpie, come on.
Yeah.
Big dad joke. I'm going to write that one down. Steal that one away. But, you know, I think, you know, in my experience, when I'm looking for somebody, and so other people look for different people for various reasons. Some people want to feel good. They want the woo-woo-woo. They want the rah-rah. They want the happy-clappy, right? And they want to work away feeling something. But information acquisition does not equal transformation. And I find we are addicted to finding answers to questions that we have, but are not always in a position to actually take action to implement them, to make them a reality. And massive action is what sets apart the round two-its from the go-getters. And I feel like if you have qualifications, likewise, if you've gone to university and got some degree and some piece of paper that says you have done this and committed this much time to doing this thing and you have this outcome, I also believe that if you don't have lived experience doing the thing, and yes, you can gain lived experience as you do the thing, but do not try and position yourself as an expert when you actually haven't had expertise in that field. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that the coaching space specifically, it does need more governance. It is very hodgepodge, airy-fairy, woo-woo, and every second person out there can just do a weekend course and get a certificate that has no validity, that is not associated with any sort of peak body or any sort of place that oversees that what you're doing is as of some level of relevance to the thing that you're saying you're going to deliver to people. And, you know, the same applies to the fitness industry as an accredited personal trainer. And to be fair, most people who are personal trainers aren't even registered with a governing body, let alone accredited with a governing body. That's a whole voluntary process I took myself through, right? But the fact is there's no scrutiny over that industry. So you've got a bunch of people that will do a fast-tracked online course to become quote-unquote personal trainers, but then have zero desire to continue their education past that online course. And so they become irrelevant. They fall behind on what best practices are, and that can actually be dangerous as well. And that's just one example of something where, you know, it's really easy to get qualified. But there's also another reason that, you know, 60% of people that become personal trainers drop out of the industry in the first 6 months. And in the second 6 months, a further 40% of those who are left drop out as well. Because, you know, if you are not keeping yourself relevant and you are not actually helping people and developing people relationships, because that's actually what the fitness industry is. It's a relationship business.
Yeah, because it's a business too. Like, you're delivering a service, obviously, to people. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy because you see all of these coaching modalities popping up and you see these people with these really obscure certifications. And I'm all for short courses, right, and professional development. But unless you've got some pillar type of experience or some really nuanced thing that you can provide people an answer to solve their problems, then you really need to go back and work out what it is that you actually deliver and how you're going to frame that. Because maybe you're not a coach. Maybe you are a mentor. Maybe you're an advisor. Maybe you're a guide.
Yeah, that's what there's these, it's sort of in full circle about what the original, I think, thinking behind my question was, is about that the terms matter, and the evolution of, like, how you or I or anyone for that matter comes up with the term that they initially end up going, oh, yeah, that's me, is reflective, like, certainly about the point that they're at, like, either then originally in their life, then in their business. I was actually just having a chat to somebody last night at like a networking thing with a friend, and we were talking about those funny points, like where you have certain realizations in your business about how inexperienced you were at a certain point in the past, which you only have with retrospect. And then those like and then those terms that like you've obviously reached like an interesting point now, and it makes more sense after looking at the stuff about you online and talking to you, matching those two things up makes complete sense to me now. But it only makes sense because I'm talking to you. And that's kind of ties a bit back into like just either reading and going, okay, Loz has got, you know, this, 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 and this. See a few videos about you, blah, blah, blah. You know, read some stuff. Your branding is obviously sort of representative generally of you. So it gives me a good insight. But then like the real deal is ultimately, I think it's pretty safe to say, is like with just about anyone or anything, is like when you actually talking one-to-one with somebody, or with the group, like or with the group too, like where people can hear you, because like you, there's all those missing sort of nuances about like your energy, you know, that you're giving, like it's really, really obvious, you know, and like how you're talking and like how articulate you are about that series of things, like the connections between, you know, experience and that other stuff. Cause the thing that I found curious kind of straight away and different to what I've seen before. Cause I like in our industry, for whatever reason, I've worked like stacks over the years with different people who are business mentors, who used to be sort of accountants, people I'm sort of now to who are friends, who all have very particular different angles when it comes to coach, trainer only, like fitness trainer, who is a person that I know in particular who's a PT, but is very obviously really good with people in a much more different way, but doesn't realize that they're probably that type of person yet, but they come across to me like that. And I'm like, that's interesting, but they're not calling themselves that. So that's where what you're actually like and what you come to realize either through like, you know, feedback from people going, hey, like you're really good at this. Yeah, really? Am I really? Like, and yeah, like you're awesome. Like you're really friendly with people. And like, oh, I never thought that. I was just like, you know, I mean, whatever. And that is like, sometimes that's just the feedback from friends, family, or from some stranger you've met, which is actually, I would probably argue, is sometimes more powerful.
Yeah.
Because where someone just hasn't had any reason to be influenced by anything else about you, because I mean, you know, they're your best mate, or they're your husband or your wife or whatever, like they just see things in a completely different light, right?
Yeah. And I think you've hit the nail on the head with us all, because we see ourselves from a cognitive lens of bias, right? You know, we assimilate our understandings and value systems and actions with a certain label all the time. And we use labels to help us understand and create context about situations, people and relationships in our lives. And so it's very easy to pigeonhole yourself into something if your entire paradigm is based on that understanding of the world and the situation in which you find yourself in. And so, I mean, same as, you know, Mojo Mentor, that came from just hearing feedback from people all the time. You're like, you really just help with Mojo. And when people said the word Mojo, I just think of Austin Powers and Mojo, you know, and I was just like, what the hell? But it kind of had a really cool ring to it. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind
of. Yeah, but it does work. Like, because it sounded. My assumption when I heard that, so I'll say what my assumption was when I saw that, because that was one of my questions. I was going to be like, so what's this Mojo Mentor thing was? And you were like, well, you know, was my assumption was it was an established accreditation that somebody had made up and that you were, and that you were sort of, I thought it was something like that, because that was what I, that's my experience. I didn't assume that, which is like way more funny and more interesting. You just made up your own one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great. You know, that's kind of that sounds like different, you know, it's ultimately not dissimilar. And this is saying in like, you know, a positive way, it's like when people go, it's a way to still express something. When people go, I'm going to create a series of awards for my industry. And the reality is that like anything like that is just a way to express an idea that you're doing well or that you're this or that. Like it's a part of
the
brand and you get an award for it, or you say, I'm a major mentor, this means this. And the word obviously has meaning straight away for people.
Mm.
I'm like everybody generally knows what that means too. So that's helpful. You then have like some random word that you made up in the English language that nobody understood. Like at least they're like, oh, I know what Mojo is. This is like
they can put two and two together, right? And I think that's it. And I think we've got to understand that we all have unique selling propositions. We all have something that differentiates us from our competition. But most people sit in this soup that is a very red ocean, and they don't have the confidence and experience a lot of self-sabotage and imposter syndrome, as people would frame that, to say, oh no, I'm not good enough and I can't be that. And the reality is that it can become your superpower. Your nuances and your craziness and all of the neurodivergent circuits that connect you all together can be the thing that actually sets you apart. And so when we decide to embrace those parts of ourselves that sometimes we think that we have to suppress in order to fit in and be a certain way, especially when we're dealing with business and corporate, like I tell you what, the way that I used to frame myself in social situations is so differently to the way that I present myself even physically, right? So back then, you know, I've been in business for 24 years, very long time. I started my first business at 15 years of age, and I started my real big girl business when I was in my early 20s upon graduating from university with a degree in IT, of all of the things. And it's funny because I would rock up to these social events, these networking events, and it'd be full of middle-aged guys with big guts, balding heads, wearing suits and ties. And so then I would have outfits that I would wear to make sure that I would fit into that culture.
Yeah.
And as time went on and as my life evolved and all of the situations that I would find myself in started to force me to pivot my identity. And there's been a bunch of things that I can say have been really catalytic moments in my life where I've decided to see the silver linings and make changes to become the person that I am, you know, on the treadmill having a conversation with you, is that I'll rock up to those exact same things now. And I have this uniform that I wear, right? And it's like a weird headband that has like fairy bread on it. And I put it in a bow. I mean, it's just as obscure as the ears that I'm wearing when I'm talking to you, right? I have these shirts that say really stupid stuff. I have shirts that say not made to be subtle, or something that says, neurodivergent, and hot pink pants and sneakers. Like I wear like white sneakers, or I wear some version of that. I might be wearing a hot pink Lycra Dolce & Gabbana suit, like whatever it is, life's too short to be average. And so now that I go to those meetings, every time they become conversation starters. Rather than being a wallflower and blending into the background, it's enabled me to express myself in a different way, which is completely aligned with who I authentically am and the vibrance and the high energy that I am. Like people think that I'm putting it on. I'm like, no, like try living with me. Ask my husband, right? He'll tell you this is not made up. This is exactly what you see is what you get. WYSIWYG. We used to say that in IT, right? Yeah. So the thing is, by embracing that part of who I am and understanding that I am quite quirky and that I don't need to suppress that, it actually makes people want to have a conversation with you and to be inspired, and you become so memorable that people will reach out to you because you're like, you were the chick that did the thing or wore the thing or said the thing.
Yeah.
Right? And you're not just some punter in the background blending in a suit, wearing a tie because you think that's what culture, you know, asks you to be. So I think if we step outside what we consider norms and almost become disruptors within our own spaces, it's very interesting to see what happens. I mean, not everybody wants to wear a bright pink Dolce & Gabbana suit. Like, I get that. Not everybody wants to wear that. Not everybody wants to wear tight pants or headbands or weird shit. Some people just want to be themselves, but being able to express yourself in whatever way that is, you know, if it's wearing a suit, if it's wearing a suit with like hot red Chuck Taylor sneakers, do it. Like, just go do the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Is that the assumption, I guess, that some people maybe subconsciously have is that if you're going to be different, you've got to be crazy. And I mean, that's like, you know, if that's your thing, then that's absolutely fine. But like the difference that's the extension of the brand, like the brand idea, like that's our sort of area that we always sort of work in from a visual point of view, but that just extends to, you know, how you are. And of course, like personal brand, all these things are really, really, you know, commonplace. People think about them a lot more than they ever have before, like personal brand and branding and, you know, and all these other terms like neurodivergent. Like people, I reckon, I don't know how many years ago, if you'd asked somebody what that means, people are like, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
But the point being, I guess, is that things, I have this theory about stuff in general, about life, which is, would you like to hear it, Loss?
Go on.
Okay, here it goes. Okay, everyone. No, so what it is that it's that everything, and it's not only fashion or art or visual things, it's that everything in life that at some point is niche will at some point become popular.
Yeah.
Like it'll move, and it's not moving up a scale. It's not from like low to high. It's just a natural evolution of things. And maybe it's not every single thing, but it's most things. And that also applies to terminology. It applies to use of language and use of terms. And I coined this phrase at home years ago, which is cargo pants syndrome, which is that cargo pants are like, you know, not really anymore because cargo pants, you have pockets everywhere. But I remember
They're back in fashion. Did you not know that?
Yeah, yeah, I knew that. But the point being that originally that's so funny.
What? I hate cargo pants. I hate them so hard.
But the point being that I coined that phrase just as a way to describe to have like a brand or like a to call it something, you know, it was like Mojo Mentor. You know, yeah. You have to call it something. So that was the term, being that there was a point, I remember like being at school years ago, where that was like army people and that was just about it, had them. And that was it. And you go into like a disposal store and it'd be like, oh, cargo pants, you know, and you're just like, oh, that's army people pants.
Yeah.
And then that slowly but surely it came into fashion. And then you'd see it with some like indie rock stars and it'd be like a bit niche. And I'd be like, oh, that's a bit. And it was a bit like indie high fashion at some point. And then it's a filters in. Then you see it at like Kmart and then it's like everywhere. And then it's like everywhere you look, and then in and out of fashion, then it becomes a part of the accumulated set of things in fashion and terminology that shifts in and out, and it's no longer niche anymore. It's just one of these sort of things that shift in and out of popularity. And
I love that. I love that analogy. It's very true, isn't it?
It is.
Anything.
Yeah, I mean, I see it especially because I'm a visual person. I'm always looking at, you know, brands, and I'm always going, you know, like fonts and things. I'm going, that's used to be unpopular. It's in again. Things that are, you know, things and these cycles, things that all of a sudden now 90s is almost not quite retro yet, but it's like a little bit considering coming into what is considered retro, even though it's a bit of a non-era in terms of some more identifiable like visual things, but then people find it because they run out of stuff like to have new things to talk about. So they just pull things out. But the point about all that is then when just pulling that back to terms and like the use of words and use of like how people identify, you know, you or I, and they have to have these words to do to do that. And like leaning into that, you know, for yourself is, you know, one, comfortable, and two, it's descriptive, right?
Yeah.
Like it actually is, you know, it's has just a very practical, hands-on kind of it's just who you are, what you do. So
it's a term of reference, and people need terms of references to understand the position on a subject. Like whatever term of reference we use, if it's legislative terms of reference, if it's being on a particular social media platform, there are terms of reference that sit within the scope of that because you know what to expect from that. You know what's acceptable and what isn't. And we use terms of reference and frames of reference throughout our lives, whether we even are aware of it or not. And it's interesting what you were saying about identity and going back to the cargo pants and typography, you know, trends that, you know, what's old is new and what's new is old. And a lot of these things, they migrate from the shadows and the outskirts of society. And because they're so nuanced and interesting, the curiosity of human nature and the voyeuristic tendencies that we have, it always wants to understand about the other, right? I'm doing air quotes as I'm saying this, but, you know, we do have voyeuristic tendencies. So when something feels different to us or other to us, the curiosity, you know, killed the cat. And so we then take these routes of pulling those things into these exclusive zones, but eventually that becomes mainstreamed and then diffused. And so when we look at fashion, for example, something can be considered high fashion and like the movie Zoolander did this very well where they talked about derelict, right? I don't know if you know that movie well, but I've watched that movie so many times. So, you know, they get this fashion and it's basically inspired by hobos living on the street who are, you know, wearing garbage bags. And so they basically take this concept and turn it into a high fashion concept because it's the other, right? Because the curiosity is there. It's like, how can we turn this into something niche and exclusive? And people will throw their money at the stupidest things to be different. People always are finding new ways to differentiating themselves from the masses. That's why luxury goods exist, because it's unattainable for people. But eventually, you know, one of those high fashion labels, they create a diffusion line, which means it becomes more accessible. The quality of the garment isn't as good. They make more, so they're manufactured at a cheaper cost. And you see things like brands like Mambo, for example, which used to be cool back in the 90s, to, you know, you can buy that stuff at Best and Less now.
Fairly or independent. W. Yeah, it used to be like a fairly independent sort of like surf indie kind of brand. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you see these brands doing these, you know, 180s on what they mean, and the value then becomes less and less and less. I mean, the music industry is a great example of this. Fitness and health trends. I mean, at the moment, people are jumping on these new innovative ways to help people become more healthy. And they're insane. Like you see some of the ridiculous things. Like the trend right now is like hyperventilating and breathing because a guy called Wim Hof has popularized that. People are now doing ice baths. People are buying ice baths and putting them in their home. People are converting freezers to ice baths. People are getting saunas. They're investing all of this money into these things. And I guarantee you they'll use them now, but eventually they'll stop using them. They'll just sit around and accumulate dust and probably clothes hang off them. But when things are on trend, people buy into the trend. They buy into the hype. And you're going to see just like all through social media over the next 5 years, you'll watch these trends come and go. And social media, I guess, has pulled back the curtains and allowed us to see more than ever how we function in society. And the rich become richer and the poor become poorer, and people buy things because they think they need them because it's going to give them some tokenized idea of status. But health is the most simple thing in the world. Like being healthy, and this is what I like to do when I break this stuff down, simplify to amplify. You actually need to make things so simple at a biological, physical and chemical level. You are operating the same as the person next to you, basically. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some genetic differences and there's some epigenetic and there's some nuances that make you, you and me, right? But ultimately, if we treat our bodies with the same level of respect, if we eat well, if we even consider what it is that we're eating, if we move our bodies enough, if we get enough sleep, we drink enough water and we breathe properly, chances are you won't need to have to do that ice bath as an extra thing in your day, or have the sauna, or write the affirmation, or do handstand push-ups, or some obscure thing that you think you have to do to be healthy and fit. And I think specifically looking at the health and fitness industry, we are clouded with all of these ideologies about what we're supposed to do and all of these things we're supposed to do. But you've got to remember, the people that come up with these ideas are making money out of selling you that idea. So they're going to have a cognitive bias and a vested interest and making you feel like you must absolutely have the thing and do the stuff. So, you know, my job as a Mojo mentor is to help people realize they have the capacity to do all this shit without needing all of these things. They have the capacity to be active, happy, healthy, vital, and productive. But you've got to come back to basics, because no amount of affirmations, ice baths, 4 a.m. wake-ups and saunas can outdo crappy eating, inadequate breathing, poor hydration, shitty sleep, and not moving our bodies mindfully.
Mm.
Fullstop.com.
Yeah, well, that, yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, like, there's some eternal truths, right? There's just like certain things that work. There's a whole heap of things that are up for debate or up for sort of opinion, all the different variations. But I think it is, whilst this would, I mean, I no doubt sound to some people like a very cynical point of view, but I think it's like a 100% true. Like outside of, say, someone's, you know, passion for ice baths. I'm saying, if we use that example, their passion for ice baths, or like my passion for doing infographics or like straightening, which is all true. I mean, people are passionate, but then the drive in the marketplace, where there's a bunch of other people doing other things in their own way, you know, then ultimately all of that boils down to the people, because they're running a business, then to profit. Because then if profit wasn't an idea, if you just did it, if we lived in a Star Trek universe where you could just put stuff in the machine and you either get a revolver or like a hamburger,
yeah,
and then like, yeah, you pull out and you can like shoot somebody, or you can eat a burger, and then, or you can like make some jelly beans, which we don't live in that universe.
Not yet.
Not yet. And there's no money, and everyone in that universe is doing everything for the betterment of themselves and for like the common good. And of course, so they can go and attack other alien races. Of course, that's the other thing that they do. They still wage war on everyone. But outside of that, there's no profit. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily torn, but it's still a fact. Like people, those two things are intertwined. People still are passionate genuinely often about things, and then they've got to make a living in this current world. But where those things meet and there's a competitive market, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, no doubt I've always loved running our own business. I love competitive sports. I like competition in things. I think it's good for yourself. I like playing, so I play squash. And so like I always play like I've done martial arts. So like the fight with yourself, but you can't just fight yourself. Like,
yeah,
as like somebody else, you got to fight them. But like that's the fun part about it. So I like all that. I like competition. I think it's really both fun, enjoyable, and sort of challenging. But then when it comes to all the things we're talking about in terms of, okay, you've got a bunch of ideologies over here about like, you know, health, for example, it's, I mean, in this bigger world, in 21st century world, where you've got more of everything, more quickly, more whenever you want it, you know, at your fingertips 24/7 with our smartphones. People are so used to that now. So, like, what do you think about that? It still feels weird, like calling it the 21st century. Every time I say that, I'm like, yeah, we are in the 21st century. It still sounds weird, like I'm in a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, like, I get it.
Yeah, but like, you know, when people, what was I saying? Off track.
You must have neurodivergence.
Well, maybe I do. Maybe I've never.
No, you're talking about, you know, like if people could just do things for free, but people can't because we've got to make money, you know, the track that it seemed like you were going down was, you know, what do you think difference that makes? I mean, is that kind of the tree you were barking at?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm back on track. Thank you. Thank you for your assistance. that they're in like the current 21st century when people are so bombarded by information, like what's your opinion about where that meets like everything that you speak about outside of the really obvious things, like it's harder to know what's right and it's harder to because there's so much of it.
Yeah.
But yeah. What's the good part of us being in this sort of environment with all this information, and what's the not so good part? You know, if you go, the not so good part being hard to choose, et cetera, sure. What's the good part of it?
Well, I'll start with really hard stuff, because the hard stuff is always information overload and content pollution exists and it's real. And because we live in a capitalist society that's driven by companies and profits, which is just, I mean, if you think that we're not there, then you need to do a reality check, because that is how the world has been driven for a really long time since industrialization. But the reality is it means that everybody's out there trying to make a quick buck off you, no matter what the risk is to you. But as humans, we will constantly seek the path of least resistance. We will constantly seek cheap, quick, and easy solutions to manage our problems. So the best part of living in the 21st century, live long and prosper, is that, yeah, and it's funny because I watched The Jetsons as a kid, like that show in my age, right?
Yeah.
Like I grew up in the 80s. And, you know, I used to love watching The Jetsons. And I see all this stuff coming to fruition and I'm like, what the hell? Like all of this stuff that they talked about, except for the flying cars, but we're pretty close. The reality is, what better time to be alive where we have the capacity to make informed choices? But it's less about making informed choices, Sol, and more about actually taking action towards something and like try things out. Try the friggin' ice bath to realize it's shit. But it's not that it's, I just hate ice baths. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I just can't. I can't even do it. And I get all of the benefits, but I'm like,
too cold.
Yeah. Like the way that my body is, it doesn't do a hell of a lot for me, you know, to be fair. And maybe I'll change my mind. And that, of course, is actually okay. You know, there's a lot of, like, I think the fact that we need to be continually evolving is probably more important than deciding what's the most healthy way to eat. What's the best way to exercise? So do I hit? Do I do 7 minutes of intense HIIT training, or do I do a 30-minute walk? I mean, rather than just being stuck in stagnation because a confused mind doesn't take action, it's to go, okay, well, I've heard about this thing, so I'm going to go try this and see what happens. I feel like you've got to make an informed decision and construct your own reality from other people's ideas. I mean, I always say if you're following a diet that has a label, you probably shouldn't be on it, because it's not a one size fits most for anything in your life. And what works for you probably won't work for me. What might be a mammoth task for you could be a walk in the park for me. So, you know, attend to what your lifestyle goals are. And I think the biggest challenge that people have right now is they don't actually know what the heck they want out of their life. They think they know what they're supposed to have. They think that they have to buy a new Kia, or that they have to live in a big house, and that the house has to cost $1.2 million, and they have to have a certain type of wedding, and they have to have a certain type of outfit, and they have to have certain types of kids that go to certain types of schools and talk in a certain type of language to earn a certain amount of money to be happy. But that's not reality. I used to live a life like that. So I lived a life. I was married to a guy called Brian, and I had all of the things. I had expensive handbags. I had a nice car. I had a tokenistic husband who was gorgeous, and I was miserable. My first reality check happened when I had my first health episode and I rapidly lost weight. I got to 40 kilos and I nearly died. I was pooping blood. I can't sugarcoat that. Went to hospital. They diagnosed me with a condition called ulcerative colitis. Now, I was living a life that wasn't that inspiring. It was pretty vanilla, but I had all the things that said that I was doing well. I had this tokenized reality of success. But I was clearly very stressed. And they told me that my disease, ulcerative colitis, which is like Crohn's disease, it's a form of inflammatory bowel disease where you ulcer and you bleed. It's very painful. They said it's normally triggered by stress, so I had to find a way to minimize stress, probably go on a gluten-free diet, and here's a whole heap of anti-inflammatory drugs and some corticosteroids, slap me on the bum and send me home. I then gained 26 and a half kilos in 6 months, hated myself even further, ended up self-medicating with marijuana and bloody alcohol, and I developed depression and anxiety and then was medicated for that. But the system told me that I was okay because I wasn't sick technically. And I lived like that for 8 years. So, you know, I had all these things and then started having problems and then had to assess my reality. I was still buying things and I was still married to Brian, but then the three big things that made me question my identity, my future, and my sense of reality happened between 2016 and 2017. I was running a business with my father, selling mobility equipment. That was my first, I'd say adult business, but that can be taken out of context. Growing up business. And my dad and I had a physical altercation in our shop, okay? We had a physical altercation that led to him going completely schizo, writing me out of his life, divorcing my mum, completely going off the rails and never talking to anybody ever again. And then my husband committed suicide. And then my grandpa died. In between all of that, I got diagnosed with a brain tumor and had a hole in my heart. So I had all of these opportunities to re-identify what it is that I needed in my life. And I look at all of those instances as silver linings. And I can say to you right now in this chat that my husband's suicide was the best thing that ever happened, because it forced me to wake up to my reality that it was driven by external gratification, external things to make me feel happy, when really I was never fulfilled. My husband was never fulfilled. He never felt happy. He never felt like he was enough. He never felt successful enough, big enough, rich enough, smart enough, pretty enough, gorgeous enough. You know, he never felt enough. And that reality hit me in the face the moment that he died. And then my grandfather died, and this entire existence that I had engineered around all of these male role models, because I'm quite a masculine energy naturally, all of these masculine identities in my life were gone. My dad, my husband, and my grandfather. And so I was forced into a position where I had to forge a new identity and decide what my reality would look like, Saul. I was still running this business at this time. My dad tried to send me into bankruptcy. And then my husband's family tried to take all of my husband's estate as well. So I'm going through court and I didn't know what friggin' way was up. Now, I started finding fitness at this point in my life, because rather than going out, I went in and I decided that I'm just going to prioritize sleep. I'm just going to make sure I get enough sleep. I didn't want to be in the real world because everything was so hard and confusing. So I would sleep a lot. But then the next step was that I wanted to start finding something I could do. So I started going to a gym and walking on a treadmill, just like I am right now, right? Half an hour before closing time, pre-24/7. And then I got introduced to lifting weights, and then I started conversing with all these middle-aged men who lift weights at 8:30 at night because they're the only people in the gym, and started talking about nutrition and goal setting and personal development and all of these amazing things that I'd never actually spoken about with my cohort of friends in my culture. Mm. And this kind of took me down this path of, you know, exploring, okay, well, if I go really inwards and then I start looking at my body, what could I do with that? So I started doing bodybuilding shows, but then obsessive tendencies started to manifest themselves for me. And I didn't know at the time, but thank God I had a great circle of influence who started to bring this up for me. Most people do one show every 3 to 4 years. I did 13 shows in 14 months because I have ADHD. When you zig so far in one direction, sometimes you have to zag an equal amount in the opposite direction. Maybe if you're really bored with your life, you have to go have an ice bath to realize that none of those things work together. But, you know, the journey that I've been on has been quite definitely non-linear. Put it that way. It's been like this, right? To get me to this point where I realize, and, you know, I've remarried now. My husband's 15 years my senior. He's your daughter that's 10 years my junior. And now she has a daughter 7 years old. So I'm Gma to a 7 year old. She came over the other day and she said, "Hey, Gma," she's a bit of a weirdo, "hey, do eggs smell like chicken bums?" And I'm like, "That's a very good question." This is what she's like. She's so weird, but I love it, right? But through this entire experience, I guess, there's been opportunities to squint for the silver linings. We all have these moments in our lives, whether it was in our personal or professional lives, where we find ourselves in what I call a shituation. It's a really shitty situation where it feels really hard and we get so bogged down, pardon the pun, but totally intended, by all of these, this minutia of these things, and we feel incredibly stuck. But the reality is, if we can go inwards and focus on the things that we can actually control, none of this external noise, none of this bullshit from social media or all of these external voices that keep popping up for us, trying to sway us in a certain direction, if you can actually just start looking after yourself, you'll be surprised what starts happening in your life. And your idea of success completely changes. I do not define my life by the things that I have. Sure, I still have some of those nice high-end handbags and I like nice things, but my life is incredibly rich with experience. It's incredibly rich with relationships, and it's incredibly rich with exploring those really nuanced parts of who I am that I tried to hide for so long because I felt that I had to suppress them in order to fit in. You need to stand out to fit in. Life is too short to be average. And when we look at where we sit socially, it's the big disruptors of the 21st century that are making shit happen. And every single person that comes into your life has the capacity to make a change somewhere. And you never always know what a conversation might set up for somebody else. But I do find that by sharing 100%. The pain, right, just by sharing the pain and the challenges and the things that you may not ever want to share with somebody, but they eat at you day in, day out. Sometimes by sharing that with somebody can become, I guess, a permission slip for somebody else to maybe share something with you that maybe they've been holding on for so long to, maybe opens up an entire new possibility for a part of themselves that they didn't think that they could ever embrace.
Because it's hard. It's hard for people. I mean, harder for some than others to feel comfortable in general, not even specifically comfortable with that person, but just in general with people for whatever reason. So I mean also thank you for sharing too, because I mean it seems like one of those ultimate Shakespearean tragedies that is a real truth with just about everybody I think who's ever existed, except for maybe a tiny percentage of people who, you know, really extreme things have to happen to you for you to make change. I mean, I think that's my experience.
Yeah.
It's my family's. It's just about everyone I know. And it seems so tragic. It seems like, you know, it seems like it's out of like a Shakespearean tragedy. You know, it's like the crazy thing that sort of has to happen that really you don't want to happen ever, of course, because why would you? But it often ends up being the only way. Like you come to some like real catalyst or real change. And I mean, that seems to me, I mean, I've come to the conclusion, like, a, you know, with certain things, you know, you go through life and you're like, yeah, you feel like you understand, you know, A, B, C, D better. You don't completely understand it. You don't completely get everything. And, but my conclusion about some of that is, one, I think it's completely fine, like, to accept that will be no doubt, you know, still changing. Because I mean, I can think of a number of ways I thought about a number of topics over the years that were like kind of like a little bit different or vastly different to how I think about them now. I thought, well, it seems like I would have been like those. A really different person, but I know I'm not. Like, I'm not a really different person. But my memory then sort of tells me it conflicts otherwise. I'm like, that's interesting. And so therefore for me, that just means that's also a natural course of events. One, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Two, and then it helps, like you were sort of saying, it does actually help, you know, when other people share, because one, it gives you that permission to go to share back, even if it's just to make yourself feel a little bit better. Or it can, like we've kind of been talking about, it can actually be the catalyst to make some change that you would otherwise not have come to that conclusion about.
Exactly. Like
because you just had some chat. And that's, and you do, like, you hear those sort of stories all the time. I mean, that is actually, despite the, like, I'm a real sucker for sob stories. Like, I'm just gonna, like, I'm really, it's pretty tragic, but I'll put it out there, especially sad animal stories. It's terrible. Oh man.
I'm with you on that. I'm
hopeless. I cannot. We watched the other night. There's a very, emotional. I'm not sure if you ever saw this show, which is called This Wild Life. It's about a family. There was a person who was involved in Big Cat Diary over in sort of Africa. This really great series from the early 2000s about these people who watch leopards and lions and tigers. And this one particular Lady Saba, who was in season 3 or 4, she's got her own show now, which is still like, I think it's about 10 years old, called This Wild Life. And her and her husband and her 3 young kids are in Africa, and they inherited her parents' place where they take people and go on elephant tours.
Oh, yeah.
And the husband is battling at the same time the poachers in the reserve. And there's this story, and like every time I've seen this episode, I'm sure every time I see it in the future, it just like makes me absolutely sob like a baby, like with this elephant that then loses its mother, and it stays with its mother all night, and these other people also stay with it, and it's got this little trunk, you know, over its mother, and it's going to be like, it's under threat of also dying because it's very underfed.
Yeah.
Anyway, but those like the part of point, I guess, of saying that too, is that stories are really important to everyone. You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's how we understand. Like you said, I think earlier, it's just sort of how we frame information for ourselves, like how we
yes.
sort of understand of the world and the universe is through stories. So when like we have stories from other people and they get shared, it's like, it's automatically, it just sort of seems to be one of those things that everyone gets, right? You know, everyone sort
yeah.
of, they, I think it's really, and that's why, you know, the popularity, like in say our industry too, of like storytelling, and, you know, is it's, whilst it's sort of really popular, it's like a bit of a catchphrase now, it's like bandied around heaps. I think it's popular because it has one of those like underlying truths.
Of course. That
people do resonate with a good story.
Yeah, well, there are entire cultures who only exist because of storytelling being handed down from generation to generation, you know, and as much as you like doing infographics, and I love a good Venn diagram, but facts tell and stories sell. And so when it comes yeah. to marketing and when it comes to connecting, I mean, if you want to connect well with people, and it doesn't have to be for profit, it can be for purpose, but telling stories and sharing those narratives, it just brings you back to that humanistic nature of the spirit of what we actually are. Because in a world where we are able to access artificial intelligence, which can actually make your life amazing if you can use it well and you can treat it respectfully, you know, we have the capacity to share stories outside of that. So we can automate, delegate, eliminate, and duplicate our tasks using technology and AI. Then it gives us more time to have these four-dimensional conversations with other human beings and other sentient beings. You can have a conversation with an elephant, a dog, a cat, a bloody guinea pig. You know, it doesn't have to involve, you know, actual words, but that level of connectivity and the stories that you share and the experiences that you create, you know, that is really where the spice of life sits. That's where the juice is. And
yeah.
we have sterilized ourselves through a lens and a screen, and never before in human history have we communicated with our thumbs. Think about that.
Hmm.
Right. So we are evolving, but we are never the same as we were yesterday. Ever. We are never, you know, every 7 years you are actually literally and biologically a new person.
Yeah.
Because your cells turn over.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're not growing, you're dying souls. So, you know, we do experience all of these things in our lives, and we acquire information, and we get to make better decisions, and we can reflect on our lives. I've got a video on YouTube. I mentioned this morning. I ran a workshop today, and I just was reminiscing on something casually. I have a video on YouTube. It's like my daily routine. It's the most convoluted, ridiculous thing that I used to do in the morning. I used to wake up and do all of these stupid things, like have cold showers and do saunas. Like, I've done all that, right? Now, people ask me, you know, what do you think about morning routines? I don't have a routine. I have non-negotiables in my day or over my week. And as long as I do those things, like I should have gone to the gym before this, but I got bogged down with paperwork, and that's okay. I've got a client at the gym later on, and so I'll go and I'll train. Mm. But, you know, what that looks like is different to what it used to look like. But I think routines and structures can be useful in our lives, but we've got to experience the experience, right?
Mm.
And I think that if we bring ourselves back to experiences, I mean, the only non-renewable resource we have in our lives is time.
Mm.
So if we bring ourselves back to conversations, storytelling, connectivity in a four-dimensional space, like if you had the choice to meet someone for a coffee over Zoom or meet them in a cafe for a real coffee but have to delay that coffee, then choose the latter.
Mm.
It's more important. It's more important to connect with people more than ever. And I think that if brands and businesses look at that in the way they sell things, I hate being sold to in chat. I don't want somebody making a friend of me on Facebook and then immediately be like, I want to do this thing. I'm like, dude, I haven't even gotten to know you.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
100%. You can learn a lot through your life and reflect that back into your business, and it will make you, you know, profit through purpose. If you can find a way to add unique value to someone's life, that has far more longevity in business than any commoditized thing that you can provide. So I just sold my mobility business about 8 weeks ago, right? Now, I'm trying not to timestamp this, but earlier this year, I sold my business that I'd had for 18 years that I started with my dad that I fell out with, and I had to employ people, and I scaled that business from nothing to multi seven figures, right? And I exited that business, and I get to do this thing, talk to people just like you, have conversations all day. I'm living my best life. I could never have dreamt that I could live this life where I actually get to be myself and have conversations. But the one thing I learned very early on is I've got to become a values-based coach, consultant, mentor.
Mm.
It's about what value can I add to this person's life?
That comes first, right?
100%.
Yeah.
And whatever the remuneration for that is, we just work that out on the value that we're going to provide, right? And I have standardized ways of creating that. I have programs and services. But because I have guaranteed results and I know that the process works when people follow it, then it means that exchange is really easy to articulate. And if people aren't ready, cool. As I said, not everyone's cup of tea, whiskey, you know, fine wine, dog ball. Okay. But the reality is that in business, so many of us think that we have to do things a certain way and we pigeonhole our things. Oh, we have to post 4 times a day on social media. Bullshit. I guarantee you, if you've got something to say and you've got a superpower and you are an expert in something, we all are experts in something.
Mm.
And you can get in front of somebody and you can be totally obsessed with that thing and you can have a conversation with somebody about it. Somebody will want to pay you some money to help them get there faster than you did.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just how it works.
Yeah, so, no, it's true. It's 100% true. Yeah. And that's one of those just really true things. And it doesn't sound like, you know, the solid business plan or anything. It's like where, you know, information, good level of skill, like having to tick certain things, then plus, you know, passion about it, plus these other things. That's where the sweet spot lies. But ultimately, underlying all that, like if you don't have the right intention behind what you're doing, then like everything else kind of, oh, it doesn't always fall apart, but it's like, you know, I hope that I sort of had this in myself before I did, I mean, martial arts years ago, but I know certainly it was like that. And it's not in every martial arts club. It's not saying everyone's the same because they're not, you know, but we had a good club and our instructor was great and it was family environment. And it was really important to my wife and I, she did it with me too. And we often credit that sort of experience for many years of instilling in us just kind of good values about other people. And I actually think that's really important about that giving kind of comes first. And, you know, it's like the farming versus hunting thing. It's like you farm, the farmer will nurture the crop and they'll nurture it and it'll grow and then it'll grow again and again and again. And it'll have future growth. And the hunter will just go out and hunt something and kill it, then bring it back. And there's no, future growth. I mean, that's a simplified version of that. But, you know, and you know, sorry, all the hunters who actually need to hunt, but like it's not a one size fits all thing. But the general analogy, though, I think is a accurate one, is that if you go out there with the right intention with kind of anything, and you're there to do the right thing in whatever that scenario is first, not with an expectation of something else of what you're going to get. I mean, yeah, it doesn't mean you don't you know, have a plan and you don't have a strategy for profit. You know, it's not one this or this. It's that you still have that, but the original intention behind it is not to get. It's like to do your job and have the right sort of idea, knowing, like, certainly not like in early days when they start the business, it's hard because they don't have any money and you've got that's also like a natural part. Like, you do things differently, right? And then afterwards you go, actually, I've got a lot of evidence to show that what I've been doing is working. And if I do the right thing and have the right principles first, I know the profit and all these things are going to come. That's just going to come. Like, it'll just happen. I don't have to be like overly concerned about that. And so therefore you can also kind of, the more you do that, then the better you can be there for whoever it is you're helping out. I mean,
yeah,
I think that's really true. That's I'm sure there'd be like a bunch of people that'd be like, oh, that sounds a bit, you know, that's a bit woo-woo, but it's not. I think it's just the ultimate, you know, doing the right thing sort of attitude. And I think that's important.
There's longevity in that as well. And like, if you're just meeting the needs of people and you understand your audience really well and the pain points that they have and the considerations that you can, you know, provide for them to mitigate risk, then you'll always have profits coming in. I mean, and you're right, it takes a long time to work out what that is. And you might need to be in the game. You might need to be in the trenches for a bit, working out what those things are. You know, what are the biggest pain points of all of the people in those circles of your avatar or, you know, your ideal client? And, you know, if you've got lived experience, even better. But the more work you get to do in that space and the more testimonials you can build, hearing it from other people is always better for other people than them hearing it from you selling the thing. So, you know, you've got to have confidence and competence. And those things need to be done together, because an overly confident person with no competence is not going to fail. The internet is full of those people who are unqualified in life and in business, who have loud mouths and big soapboxes, but they can make a quick profit and then they'll fall apart. But ultimately also, if you have too much competence and not enough confidence, then you'll never tell anybody about anything that you do, and you'll hide and you'll continuously become an infomaniac and chase information all the time to procure more stuff. And information acquisition is the ultimate form of entrepreneurial procrastination. So many entrepreneurs just constantly acquiring information and just using it as a form of procrastination to not do the thing. But also passion and purpose married with profit will keep you buoyant in a market that's constantly shifting, and consumer sentiments change all the time, you know. People change, you know, as you said, the cargo pants scenario, you know, trends change. So keeping yourself relevant is so important. And having been through multiple businesses, you know, and now doing the thing that I feel like I'll be doing for a really long time, because it's very easy to pivot. You know, for me, it's the most rewarding thing you can possibly do when you actually prioritize passion and purpose, knowing that everything you've been through is for the benefit of all of those that come after you. You know, if you're on a path and you're just further along than someone, and you know, you can just give them advice to bypass all of the bullshit and the scenic routes that you ended up taking to get to your destination, somebody will exchange some money and some time for that. Whether it's a done for you service that you provide, as in like an agency, whether it's, you know, a product that makes people's lives easier. If you focus on function and improving people's lives, you will always have income coming in. I mean, that's something I've learned. Selling the mobility business was really important for us because, unfortunately, that space had become very commoditized, and, you know, people were comparing a shower chair from us to a shower chair from Aldi, because once or twice a year Aldi sell mobility aids, and they couldn't understand that, you know, You know, ours was $160, but Aldi's was only $60. There's a huge difference in what that shower share could do. So they'll just go, oh, that one's cheaper, so I'll buy that, not knowing that the one that they bought only takes 70 kilos when they, in fact, weigh 110 kilos. Mm. The one that they bought, you can't get parts for. It doesn't meet Australian standards. It's probably going to rust because it's made out of inferior quality products, whereas the one that we sell that's $100 more is probably going to last you 10 times longer. It's got Australian standards on it. It takes 160 kilos safe working limit, and we got parts. But when you're trying to sell that to somebody in a market that's just full of people wanting everything right now for the cheapest price, you know, it becomes quite challenging. And when your moral compass is straight like mine is, you know, you feel jaded because you're trying to do the world a service. And so for me, being able to sell that business to another organization that had deeper pockets, that had further reach and had a budget to be able to accommodate the procurement of bulk purchases to bring that price down, meant that I actually did the world a great service by selling my business, because it allowed me to, A, not be stressed as much, but B, feel like I made an impact. And, you know, 20 years of goodwill that I built up in my community as being a provider of something meant that I left a legacy, and I can take all of that information, that experience and the learnings from being in that industry into everything that I do now. Because had
it's
it not
massive.
Been
– right. Massive, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's all – that's also – one of those things. It's like trial through fire, like trial through whatever that fire is. You know, it's like the other, you know, experiences you spoke about. It's all the, you know, hundreds of experiences you have speaking to different sorts of people. Some of them are like little fires, some of them are like a little tiny, you know, flame, but they're all something that kind of forges you in a different way, like it kind of remakes you. And then and like I said before, when like now I look back and I actually have this really funny sort of memory that we often laugh about at home, of when we bought this other agency like years ago, and we bought it because just at the time we thought it was a good idea to buy another business or probably grow our business, and we didn't have any great plan. Ended up being really good, but at the same time, when I did that, I thought I was at a certain level of just being a business owner or whatever, and a designer, and just like level of amount of work. I thought I'm pretty good. I didn't think about it too much. I didn't sit around, write any lists at night about all the good things that about me or anything like that. I don't really reflect on myself like that. And I got into business, and like, I think the first, after we bought it, I just about had like a nervous breakdown. And I remember my, it's an ongoing joke at home that I had this sort of revelation, which I'm sure people listening, hey, don't judge everyone, but I did stuff, and I didn't really use like lists or structure. I just did things, probably because at that point in time, I didn't have enough workload or pressure to maybe warrant it. And it didn't. And I was just like handling it okay. And it just sort of flowed and it happened. And then all of a sudden, there's this completely different environment, much more fast pace. And I was put in it and I was like, holy crap. And I remember my wife, actually, there was one time when I was pretty long hours and came home and she was like, are you all right? And I was like, you know, with the glazed look. And fortunately, like it didn't end up, that was very short lived, but it was like it was like one of those trials by fire of going,
yeah,
okay, now when I look back on that, I go, it seems so odd to think that that was me. Like if it seems really like it's funny, but I don't like, and I get it and I remember all of it, but it seems really separated from me. but it's kind of a fond, funny memory, but also still kind of confusing. It's like, I don't really relate to that person anymore.
And that's okay. That's okay. That person sits inside of you somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But I still find myself, you know, kind of analyzing it, going, how did I like, I know, don't worry about it, Saul. You know, just I'm just like, move on. But like as we're getting sort of near the tail end of the podcast, I specifically wanted to ask you, because I know it's something that you you talk about a bit about handbrake habits. Because we haven't actually talked about that. Yeah, can you just explain to everyone listening what that actually means, like in your world? What's the meaning behind that term?
So we can drive a car with the handbrake on, right? And I'll be the first to admit that I did that. I've done that many times. I remember driving down the highway, and I don't think I realized at the time I had a handbrake on. I could hear this sound, so I just turned the music up and put the window down, right, in my 1986 Celica with pop-up headlights. So when we drive a car with a handbrake on, what happens? Well, it moves but barely. It makes a terrible screeching sound. People will stare, but you can ignore that. But it doesn't go very far very fast. It costs us a lot of money to fix a car that's been driving around with a handbrake on for a long time. But when we finally remember to release the handbrake, we gain momentum and we feel like we can go anywhere and do anything. Now, here's the thing. Humans are just like cars, and most of us are surviving, not thriving, existing, not living, moving, but barely. And so I created this concept called handbrake habits. There is another concept that I have also called the healthy habit hierarchy, and it's more of an operating system to run our lives by, consisting of 6 M's in a hierarchical manner. But when it comes to daily habits and the things that we can do on a daily basis, there are 5 habits that all of us have already. And so to simplify, to amplify, to simplify, to amplify means we can start to unlock these handbrakes that sit on our lives. And so the handbrake habits are our eating. And you would have heard me refer to these earlier. Mm. Our breathing, our sleep, our movement, and our hydration. So rather than adding complicated extra things to our daily routine, because ain't nobody got time for that, like really, sustainably, adding all these peripheral things into the lives of a very busy, time-poor person is probably going to be futile. And they'll probably stick at something for 17 to 21 days, at which point their motivation dwindles and the enthusiasm of new beginnings starts to fade, and they'll just fall off the wagon with a lot of the things. And that's why gyms always capitalize on motivation lasting 17 to 21 days at the beginning of every new year. You'll find that all of those people that joined in that first week with their New Year's resos, you'll always find that there's extra marketing that's done around the 17th to 21st day of the year. Mm. And I guarantee if you just know that, you'll notice that starts to happen now. So the beauty of our handbrake habits as a concept is that when we unlock one of our handbrakes, and it doesn't matter which one, you'll start to find that the other handbrakes start to unlock themselves because we develop momentum and we start to get ourselves unstuck. Now, all of those habits are intricately linked. For example, if you started focusing more on what you put in your mouth and understanding how to eat more optimally for your body and your goals, probably your hydration will improve. Probably you'll find yourself drinking more water, less alcohol, and not needing as much caffeine to get through your day. Mm. You probably also find when you're eating a little bit better and you're drinking more, that your sleep improves. And then once your sleep has improved and you're drinking better and you're eating well, you probably find that you have more energy to exercise. You've probably got surplus energy now that you need to do something with. And if we underpin that with good breathing and understanding how breathing actually fits into our lives and how we can use it to improve the quality of our personal and professional lives, we start to create these cataclysmic shifts in our identity and our sense of vitality that can't be matched by peripheral, trendy, on-fad things. You know, but instead what we do is when we're in a crisis, we reach for these silver bullet, grand sweeping solutions to solve our problems. But fundamentally, most of us overlook the fundamentals of these handbrake habits, these things that we do every day. And so I challenge people when they are finding themselves in a situation or some crossroads in their life, rather than reaching for, you know, the 12-week challenge or downloading 1,000 books and apps on personal development or walking on coals and rah-rahing and getting yourself involved in something really obscure, go introspectively and start to notice those 5 habits you have every day and start to understand how you can start to unlock them. And so, you know, I've written a book about this. It's called Get the F Unstuck. And, you know, this book goes through all of that. This book is also ADHD friendly. It has color-coded chapters. You can see down the spine of the book where each chapter ends because there's a little color associated with it, and there's a quick guide at the front so that if you don't like to read your book from front to back, you can just answer the question and skip to the part, right? But you know, and it's also available as an audiobook and an ebook. So, you know, depending on how you like to consume information, I've tried to cover all bases. But it's a very interactive experience for people because it actually goes through anecdotally. This is what I went through. Maybe you don't need to go through it like this, but here's some evidence that suggests that this would be the best way to treat those situations. Here is an example of, you know, something you can do in your life. And then there's an interactive part where you actually scan a QR code, you get taken to a landing page, you can download and do an exercise and watch a video on why that's important to do. So I'm all about taking action, Saul. And if more people took more action, we'd probably not have the problem with our health system. Unfortunately, in Australia, 9 out of 10 deaths are associated with chronic disease, most of which could be prevented if we just looked after ourselves a little bit better, if we just ate, breathed, slept, moved and hydrated just a little bit better. It sounds so simple, right? Because it actually is simple, right?
Yeah. But
most of us don't do it long enough for it to be a benefit to our lives. So we've got to start thinking about how do we unlock the handbrake habits and make them stay unlocked.
Yeah, yeah. I take from that too. I mean, that's the, it's, yeah, it is like the simplicity of things is also one of those really underlying true things too. Like you've got, this is like a sort of revelation for us, I suppose, like my wife and I, when we've been doing a bunch of different things in our lives with the business and then there's this other property and everything. And we came to this realization, however long ago, it wasn't that long ago, like the proper part of it, which was that as soon as we start to just break everything down into little chunks, and that means like everything.
Yeah.
Like every, and even with, you know, work for the business or say, I'm not very good at doing the yard, like heaps of guys, you know, they just don't want to do the yard. But I like mowing. I like doing on the right of mower. No, I like mowing. Okay, so how can I do that? I just do like 5 minutes a day. And I actually just did this trial, which was really funny. I just thought, I'll just give it a go. I'll just see what's that's like. So instead of like sitting at the computer, I was like, I'll sit at the computer for an hour. Then I'll do some task. It could be mow for 5 minutes because then I'm outside in the sun and I get to smell the fresh air and I get to my grass, but only for 5 minutes.
Great.
Only 5 minutes. And then over the week, it was all done and I hardly noticed it. And so that I was like, interesting. You know, no big, you know, shocking revelation. Like, that's incredible. I think I'm going to do a podcast about this. No, it was more just like, well, I kind of knew that. Because if I remember back to every single sporting thing I've ever done, like especially just like Taekwondo, that's like kicking hundreds or thousands and thousands of times. And then one day you just realize you can do a spinning heel kick.
Yeah.
Like it's going no good, no good, no good, no good, no good, hundreds of times. And one day, oh, I got it. Right. And that's not because I had been having the super focus. I'd just been slightly perfecting it, or my instructor was going
time in the market. It's just like
different angle, just time. Like this, or put your leg up higher. And that was like over a long period of time. Then one day you realize, and that's kind of everything. It's like exactly what you were sort of leaning into with all that. Is it's not there's you know, I guess obsession in a way with having to have the answer that then is always harder to achieve for a lot of people because it's bigger. And so, and there's no one saying, here's how you like eat this elephant. Like
yeah, exactly.
Just like, how do you eat an elephant? Like just one piece at a time, if you like elephant. I don't
know. Exactly.
I've never tried
it's elephant. It's a big, before, it's an elephant shaped cake that's gluten free, dairy free and has no sugar in it. So I don't know what it will taste like, but you're right. And I think by chunking things down into digestible little compartments that we realize actually make up the whole, it's very easy to make changes, but we are addicted to this idea that it has to be all or nothing. And most people try and jump from stuck to unstoppable and fail because at first they don't become unstuck. If we can first of all go from stuck to unstuck and then become unstoppable, you'll start to find that, you know, life becomes easier to manage. And if you treat everything with kindness and you treat everything with that procedure, you'll be able to achieve amazing things. And where you are right now in your life, right? As soon as you start becoming unstuck and focusing on those little incremental actions you can take every day, at some point in the not too distant future, something that felt like an impossible dream back when you were stuck is so close to reality now
yeah.
that you have to continuously evolve your goals, which is what I struggle with 5 and 10 year plans. I'm like, dude, like I, like 2 weeks, 2 weeks. My life moves so fast because I call that in. I like serendipity. I like random conversations with strangers yeah. and the opportunities that they can create because that's where the spice of my life sits. Yeah. I don't do well with too much structure and too much predictability. That's my old life. That's that life with the handbags and the things and the tokenized versions of success, right? But you know, depending on where people are on that spectrum between certainty and uncertainty as a human need just allows us to dictate what that looks like. And so, you know, focus on the things that you can do today. And I guarantee you, Saul, like there are people that are listening to this will feel inspired. They'll want to take action. Think about something that's really hard and say to yourself, I can't, therefore I must. And you'll find a way to break that down into something that you can do. If you want to achieve a very audacious goal, I have a client that has a 25-year plan. He's autistic and ADHD, right? He's awesome. He wants to be prime minister in 25 years, right? He's been talking about this for the last 24 years. So he's had a plan as a child to want to be prime minister. He had a 50-year plan. Autism does that to you, right? I love it. I love it, right? But at 25 years old, he wants to be prime minister at 25. So we've been forging a plan. Like there is no reason that he can't be that or do that, right? But we've been chunking it down and working out, okay, what he actually needs. He needs to gain independence from his parents as a primary goal right now. He needs to be able to do all of these things in his life and have control and autonomy and radical self-governance. Because if he can do those things, we can transfer that skill set and superimpose it over the next goal and build upon those skills and that experience. And nothing is stopping this person from becoming prime minister. And like he's in extreme circumstance and he understands that. And I appreciate his nuances, right? Because he's amazing. You know, he can do anything. He reads a book in 2 hours, right? But he's, you know, we've got to make sure that that is a big, hairy goal. We've got to chunk it down into tangible, digestible pieces that he can actually achieve. And when we break our goals down into smaller milestones, it actually helps us to engage with a deeper sense of success because it's not, oh, when I get to this, then I, you know, that in IT is called logic. If, then, when, right?
Yeah.
But if we break those down into smaller pieces, you know, if, then, when, but it's like 10 pieces in a row stacked together over 12 weeks. It gives us a sense of achievement, which then drives us and creates that momentum that keeps the handbrakes unlocked. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. It's also the other important part about that that we've actually realized just that on that very point is that if you break it down into chunks and you don't even necessarily know as yet, you might have a plan for what the chunks are at the start,
yeah.
but the process of breaking it down, if you get to chunk number 3, invariably, in our experience anyway, invariably won't necessarily be the ones after it won't necessarily be exactly the same because you've had certain realizations that you wouldn't have had if you had just like tried to do it all at once.
Exactly.
Because you have that learning process that you're able to go, oh, yeah, right. Okay, no, that's not a good idea because now because I did this, even if it took me, you know, a 10th or 20th of the time of the whole sort of thing, you know, I realized this and that's super helpful. So it's got that very practical, helpful sort of aspect too.
Very much so.
But I'm aware also that of time too. So at this point too, Loz, I'll actually just get you, if you wouldn't mind, to share with us a little thing that I do on the podcast, which is I'm to share a quote or quotes. You can share as many as you like or as little as you like.
Well, I have a thing at the end of my book called The Library of Loz Saul, and it's all these weird references that I make that I just make up on the spot. So I've got plenty and they come to me daily. But I think my first one would be no one ever dreams of being average. Right. No one dreams of average. It's true. Also, bullshit never came out of a badass. Be motivated, not complicated. And I also think, last of all, no buts, just great buts. The end.
Thank you, Shakespeare. I appreciate that. I love it. That's so great. It's really funny, and I find a special happy place where there's like great meaning plus dumb humor. I don't know what that is. That combination with me is I find it very appealing. And
I'm with you.
And I'm not going to analyze it further. So,
the end.
The end. Yeah. So for everybody listening, I'll have links to for people to click on. But where do people go online to find out more about you, Loz? Where do they go?
Well, a really great resource is my website, which is lozlife.com. You can put a .au on the end. It'll take you to the same place, but I'm international, so I drop the AU most of the time when I tell people about it. But I also have a site, which is myname.com, lozantonenko.com. And so if you want to learn a bit more about me and the things that I speak about as a professional speaker and, you know, an all-round mojo mentor, you can learn more personal tales and, you know, the things that I am passionate about and obsessed with on that site. But if you look my name up on the internet and on socials, just do @LozAnton and the rest will just fill itself in. You'll see a picture of me pulling a face where I've got one lip up, one lip down. I know you can't see this, but you can hear it. And people go, oh, did you do that Photoshop? I'm like, no, I just watched lots of Jim Carrey movies in the 90s and learned how to do weird things on my face. Yeah. But it's a picture of me in front of a yellow background. If you click on that, you'll be able to access all the weird and wonderful things that I get up to in my life and the golden nuggets of valuable information, the things that I share and the things that I'm passionate about. You'll also be able to learn more about how I take people from stuck to unstoppable by teaching them how to simplify to amplify.
That's so great. I love it. I love that photo too. So people will if and when they get to this part, the end of the podcast, and they're talking about that, they'll know exactly what I was talking about because it'll be on the thumbnail for the the podcast. So
love it.
Great, absolutely. Thanks so much for your time, Loz, and for sharing like all your whole story and all your angles on things. I they're really valuable. I hope people get some really great stuff out of it too. And say goodbye to everybody, Loz. Say goodbye.
It's been an honor and a pleasure sharing all of the wonderful things in today's chat, Saul. So thank you. And thank you to you that is listening on the other end of this speaker. Really appreciate being able to offer you some value in your life and maybe inspire you to take some massive action to change your life from stuck to unstoppable.
You don't know Loz, but now you do. And you know me too. Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Ciao. Ciao for now.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.